Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The other really cool thing about this edition of Ladies Night is it's actually in person, too, and not virtual, which means you could play dicey questions and roll yourself.
I love that.
So do you remember? You get 3 rolls on the tower.
Yeah, I love that.
Do you know about dice towers?
No.
You put it in there, and then it rolls out into the grass.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah. It's supposed to look like Jurassic Park.
It does look like Jurassic Park. I love that.
So you want to roll?
Yeah, right now?
Yeah, let's do it.
Just stick it in there?
Yeah, go for it.
Oh, shit.
I mean,
oh, wow.
Not quite like that. So, a third timer.
I swear to God, I played basketball my whole life.
I think that's safer now.
No way it'll.
All right, we got a number one to start. This is an Abigail question. It's
okay.
Vampire survival. So let's say the Abigail cast, as in you all, the real people, are locked in a mansion with a vampire.
Okay.
Who do you think has the best chance of surviving the night?
Probably Kevin.
Why?
Because he's huge. Kevin Durant is strong.
He's so good in this movie.
He's so good. Oh, and he's the nicest guy. He's so sweet. He's the best. He's like a gentle giant.
He's pitch perfect in this. And some of his one-liners,
I know,
just like everyone was cracking up.
I know. He's so good. And he also has like Planet of the Apes coming out soon.
I'm so excited for that movie.
I know, me too.
I love that franchise, and I have so much faith in that director.
Yeah.
All right. Second roll in the tower.
Okay.
Number 8. Oh, I like this one. So this is called self-care. It actually came up during Sundance. I did a Collider Forces interview there, and Aaron Pierre had brought up that he wanted to know more about how other actors do this. Can you tell me something you do on sets to practice self-care?
Oh, that's a good question. I guess because I'm usually the kind of actor that never wants to leave the set. I'm usually just they're hanging out at the monitor, I'm hanging out with like the directors, or the producers. Like I'm always at Village. When we have like in between takes, I never go back to the green room or to the trailer. I'm always just there. But I guess going back to your own space when you need it is self-care. I rarely do that, but sometimes when I'm feeling like, you know what, I want to like connect with my husband or my mom or whatever, just need to make a phone call, I just go back to my trailer or to my dressing room and I do a call.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Just because I'm curious, when did you first discover that you enjoyed hanging out on set in Video Village rather than by yourself in the trailer?
I think during In the Heights. During In the Heights, because we were shooting out in the streets. And the trailers were far, so if you wanted to go back, you had to It was a whole thing. You had to get in a van and go. And I don't ever like people waiting for me. Like, it's a thing that I'm like, I get anxious if anyone's waiting for me. So I always like to be there and ready. And in the Heights, we had a big village. Like, a lot of producers were always hanging there. And I loved them so much that I would just want to hang out with them. And we had so much fun. So I think from there, I was like, oh, I can just do this. And so in every movie since then, I kind of just hang out. And it also, like, helps to not just, like, it speeds up the day because you're there and you're ready, but also, like, you establish, like, better relationships. You're, like, actually, like, bonding with the people that you're working with. And I also like to observe a lot. I like to learn about what, you know, how the sets work, how the directors are working, how the DP is lighting, like all of that I love watching. So it helps to just hang out and see
that. The
more
you produce, the more that's going to benefit you also.
Yeah.
I love that. Yeah. All right. One more role. Number 7 is Never Again. What is something you did for a role that now makes you say, I'm so glad I tried that once, but never again?
So this wasn't for a role. It was for a role, but it was for a role that I didn't get. But I did everything for this role. And that meant like sacrificing like a premiere of another movie that I really loved. And instead of like celebrating with my cast, I was like, I need to go and do this. A screen test for this movie, and I flew literally halfway across the world for less than 24 hours. I flew to Australia, and it was like insane. Like and then I didn't get the role, and I was like, oh, I'm never doing that again. Like, why did I sacrifice celebrating something that I loved, where I was already traveling, I was at a festival celebrating a movie. I rushed out of the Q&A after the screening because I had to get on this flight and like fly to Australia. And then I didn't get the role and I was like, I'm never doing that again. Like, no, you know, like it just felt wrong in a lot of ways. And I was like, no, never doing that again.
I get that mentality all too well. I feel like in particular in this business and probably many other sectors out there, it feels like you need to like now do everything. And sometimes that mentality can sacrifice enjoying a moment that you've earned and can live in. And
yeah.
I get it.
Yeah. And it was like a whole, like, I felt everything in my gut. Like I trust my instincts a lot. And everything about that process was telling me that that wasn't a role for me, but I really wanted it anyway. But like everything was like, there was just so many obstacles and I was doing everything in my power to like make it happen. And then I didn't even get it. And I was like, I should have just listened and not been so stubborn and, you know, and so then. After that, I'm a little bit more like, if you want me, you'll wait for me. You know, like I won't have to do the most and like sacrifice my stuff for a role that like you don't even want me. You know,
I have no clue what this role is, but given everything I've seen you do recently, I feel safe saying like you didn't need that role anyway.
Yeah.
Of really cool stuff on your plate right now.
Yeah, definitely. And if I had done that movie, I wouldn't have been able to do your monster. So I like everything is perfect.
Done.
You know, everything is perfect. And I'm so happy that I did your monster.
What's up, everyone? Welcome back to a very special edition of Collider Ladies Night. Because with this edition, Melissa Barrera becomes the first Ladies Night third timer. That's a big deal.
That is a big deal. Very special.
Thank you
for that.
I feel very special that like you're willing to come back to the show again. The coolest thing about having you back is because I don't know, it just like further puts into focus how much you accomplish so quickly. Like there's always a new slate of questions with like rich answers that I know are going to really enthuse our audience. So
thank you. That means a lot
thank
to me.
You.
And I love chatting with you always. Like, it's so, you always ask like the best questions and it's so refreshing. And I feel almost like I was just watching like SNL with Kristen Wiig joining the Five Timers Club. So I feel like I'm the first Three Timers Club for you. So yeah. we'll start a club of the Three Timers.
So I wanted to kick off the meat of our conversation by repeating a question that I asked you last time, because like I said at the top of the show, it's just incredible how much you've accomplished since our last conversation. So since our last ladies' night in March of 2023, can you tell me a new career goal that's emerged, something that was sparked by something unexpected that you've experienced over the last year?
Ooh, okay, March of 2023. So like almost exactly a year ago.
March of 2023, and then before it was January of 2022. And
wow.
I liked your answer to this question last time because it was heavily tied to your monster.
Okay. So from March of last year to this year, I think my perspective on what I'm here to do and what I'm here to do, like, on earth has changed, you know? Like, spiritually, I've had, like, an awakening in the last year. And obviously, I love acting and I want to continue to act. But the purpose of my art is now more intentional because I want to help make the world better in any way that I can. And so I've found that goes with trying to make the industry better and safer and gentler and nicer for people. And, you know, that will then become, you know, there will be ripples of that. And I think I'm just a lot more aware of the kind of people that I want to work with, the kind of people that I don't, the kinds of stories that I want to tell that will have, that will mean something to people that are maybe trying to showcase the world that we can have as a society, you know, like more aspirational stuff and it's always been important to me to work with good people, but I think now more than ever I'm like, I just want to work with like-minded and like-hearted people that you know, that share values and that want to do make movies and tell stories that are actually contributing something meaningful.
I think you are working with some wonderful people. I think of Team Radio Silence, who, you know, I love, love, love. And last time you heavily spoke about I feel like you told me about your monster before anything broke, too. So to be able to follow it from that answer to seeing it at Sundance and it being so damn good with something else. But
I had just finished it. I shot it in February and I finished right before Scream 6 premiered. So you were probably the first person that I told about it.
It's so special.
Yeah.
And like you were talking a lot about Caroline Lindy. I want to meet her so badly
because she wasn't
at Sundance. But because of what you just said, you know, we've got her, we've got Matt and Tyler and other directors you've worked with. Do you notice any shared traits among those particular directing greats, the people that have that special spark that maybe signal to you, these are people that are extra special and maybe I should have a long-lasting collaboration with them?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think I've been very fortunate to work with people like them that are you know, incredible talents that have incredible voices, but there are good people, and that they always surround themselves with good people because they have like this innate ability to just kind of pick the right people to work with, and then we become so close. And I think when you actually establish long-lasting relationships, friendships with people that you're working with, it's really special, because that doesn't happen all the time. Like, everybody's friends while you're shooting. Like, while you're doing a project, everybody is best friends and everybody's like having the best time. But it's if you're still in touch after, that's really telling, because that's actually really hard. Everyone goes on to other things, and it's really hard to stay in touch unless you both want to. And so both Caroline and Matt and Tyler are really good about that, about creating little family like nuclei. I don't know what the nucleus is.
You could have said any version. I would have been like, yes, yeah, whatever.
I don't know. But like, they're really good at like picking cool people to work with that are actually like beautiful human beings, and that we all like become friends and like actually care about each other and cheer each other on. And they're also like, they also have something very important in common, which is they want to make movies that make people feel safe in theaters, you know? And that's something that Caroline, like, that's her like life goal. Like, I just want people to feel safe in the movie theater. And that doesn't necessarily mean like you're going to think like, oh, there's so much blood. It's a murder, slasher, horror movie. It's not that. It's that, you know, that you're like, that you're safe going into a movie theater, that you're going to have a fun time, that it's going to be a movie that's going to like make you laugh, make you cry, like, you know, pull at your heartstrings, but you're going to leave the theater with a smile and like having had a good experience. And so that's, I know that they both do that, and I think that that's beautiful. And we need more of that. We need more movies like that, that like leave you with a good taste in your mouth.
What more could you ask for than that particular combination? Because we're talking about your monster. I'll jump to this next. I'm curious about the film festival experience. And I guess I'll start with a question that I know you can answer. What tip would you give to another actor out there who's about to go to their first major film festival in order to, you know, maximize the experience and get the most out of it?
I don't know that I'm the best person to answer that question, because I feel like I'm so, like, some people would say to maximize the experience, just like go out, go to the parties, like, you know, enjoy the festival, meet people, network. That would be a good answer. That's not what I do. You know, I just kind of, I'm so nervous that I am just like trying not to freak out. I'm very fortunate that my family's always with me, and I just try to like have fun, to, you know, have quality time with the people that are there, with the filmmakers, the creatives, with the other cast. Like, it's all about, to me, it's all about like celebrating our accomplishment with us. It doesn't, like, nothing else matters. To me, it's like we got here. It's huge to have a movie at a film festival, whatever film festival that is. Like, making movies is hard. And then getting into a festival is hard. So the fact that you're there should be celebrated. And it should be celebrated within the people that created it and the people that you love. Like, to me, having my family and having, like, the team there is all I need. And, like, I try to hang out with those people as much as I can. Just like, you know, let's go to dinner. Let's have breakfast. Let's, you know, if we're going to go out, let's go out, but like all of us. So it's still part of like our experience, and it's, to me, it's sacred. Like, I'm also like not a big like going outer.
I respect that.
You know, I'm very much more like a homebody. But I enjoy celebrating and really like cherishing the feat of getting there and finally sharing what you created with the world. And honestly, like going to a film festival and having the, you know, that first screening, which
is going to be of fans. Like, usually that first screening at a film festival is people that care about you, your career, people that were a part of the movie, family of, like, the people there. So it's the best kind of audience, and it's really the only audience that matters to me. You know, that's who you made the movie for. Like, that's the audience. And so it's just, to me, it's just, like, cherish the moment, like, celebrate it, bond, hang out, because you don't know when that group of people is going to be together again. Like, it's not easy. So that's my recommendation. It's a long-winded answer.
I love how you started that answer with, like, I'm not the best person to ask it. Meanwhile, that's a very important thing to remind people, because I feel like it's very easy to get lost in, like, the big picture at film festivals. Yeah. And if you do that, you miss the moment that matters. So it's an important thing to emphasize. The other half of that was a question that I don't know if you have all that much insight on, but I'm curious, is there anything that has surprised you about what goes into selling a film at a film festival?
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
I don't know that I want to answer that.
I'm so curious.
It's just, I just hate the politics of it all. Like, it's, yeah.
I get that.
It's really, yeah. I don't,
I very much, I very,
but it is, yeah.
Very
it's
much
like,
understand that.
Like, sometimes I wish I didn't know what I know, you know?
To spin that in a positive, into a positive, especially because, like, I know you're producing, too. By knowing all that stuff, you can act on what you've learned, and you could be a contributor to changing the model for the better for
other people
in the future. So.
I mean, yeah, that would be the goal, I think. I think the only way to really change it is to create more, like, another studio, you know, like, you know, that is a little bit more supportive of minority stories, that would be open to supporting a movie that doesn't necessarily have any, like, big names in it, that, like, actually believes in new filmmakers, like that.
I like that.
Yeah.
Can I, I don't have very much to give, but how do I fund the Melissa Barrera Film Studio?
Yeah, I
I'll give
you
whatever I got.
I was a judge on this, like, you know, short filmmaking pitch contest it was part of Tribeca, I believe. And it was, like, Chanel led. And so I got invited to be a judge. And I was there with, it was, like, Gail King, me, and this other woman that I'm so sorry, I forgot your name. But, like, she was a big, like, studio exec. And then she was, like, a retired studio exec. But she had been a studio exec for years and years and years. And so we listened to a bunch of pitches from, like, incredible female filmmakers. And we had to decide who gets the grant to, like, actually, like, shoot the short film. And they were all incredible. It was, like, super hard. But I had my heart set on, like, one story. And they wanted another one. But I, like, fought so hard for it that it ended up winning. And she came up to me and she was like, you should be a studio exec. Oh, sorry. She was like, you should be a studio exec. You'd be a good studio exec because you fight for your projects. And I just, like, since then, I'm like, I want to be a studio exec. Like, I want a studio. I want, you know, like, I feel like the green lighting of projects has been watered down in studios and it's not the same as it used to be. And instead of giving opportunities to, like, great original stories and new filmmakers that are, like, super talented and giving them, like, I don't know, $5 to $10 million to make a movie, they just want, like, reboots and, like, the same story, same recycled story with, like, you know, big filmmakers that, and with hundreds of millions of dollars, but there's, like, no, they don't allow for, like, the filmmakers to really, like, realize their vision because there's so many cooks in the kitchen. And so I would, if I had a studio, I would just be giving opportunities to, like, up-and-coming filmmakers and, like, supporting indie cinema, which I think is, like, having a comeback. Like, I think because audiences are a little bit, like, sick of like, the same thing over and over, I think it's opening. It's opening the channel for like mainstream audience to like look kind of around and be like, oh, but what's that movie and what's that little movie? And so I'm hopeful for that because I think indie cinema is always where it's at. Like, it's always where everybody begins.
I could not agree more.
The coolest and most original stories are found.
It's so true. I feel like audiences are smarter than many of the higher-ups give them credit for. And it's only a matter of time before even more people sniff all that out. And I feel like I have to believe this, that quality work will always rise to the top, no matter, like, what the machines are doing.
Yeah, definitely. Especially now with, like, TikTok.
Mm.
Like, you need, like, a few people on TikTok to, like, to, you know, notice a great movie, and then it can go viral, and it can become huge. So
it is so true.
That's why I love social media. I have a newfound love for social media because I used to have, like, a love-hate relationship with it, 80% hate, and because I just thought that it was, like, you know, the typical of, like, everybody's just putting the best of their lives and, like, everything is fake, and it just breeds so much insecurity on a lot of people, and everybody's just obsessed with the physical and the front of, look at how great my life is and all of that. And I was like, oh, I hate it. It's so fake. But in the last year, I've noticed, like, the power of it, actually. The power of that communication, the power that it can give creators, how it can, like, actually, like, elevate and give beautiful opportunities to deserving people. And then also, like, just the younger generation is so, so smart.
So creative.
So creative and so smart. Like, I'm a millennial, but Gen Z, I have a lot of respect for Gen Z. I do. I think they've become like the butt of the joke, and they've gotten like the worst end of the stick just in general in life and the world. But they're very smart, and they're like, nothing gets past them. And so I just have a lot of newfound love and hope for that because of social media.
I'm a millennial, too, in particular, when I'm like, I'm obsessed with TikTok, and someone's like, what are you doing on TikTok?
Yeah.
Like, one, I love honest interaction when I make that kind of content and people give me that kind of feedback. But also, like, watching younger people be so creative with tools that I didn't have access to at that age, and what they're able to create in a flash is, I mean, that's something that genuinely gives me hope for the future of this industry.
Yeah. Same.
I love it.
Yeah.
All right. Because of a lot of the things that you just brought up, I've been asking this question a lot lately, and I'm curious where all of this started for you. Do you remember the very first time you felt the power of your own voice on a set where, you know, maybe you were starting out, you were afraid to speak up, but you did, and something changed for the better because of it?
That's a good question. I'm thinking. I remember the time that my voice on set, that there was like a big misunderstanding, and that was horrible, but it also taught me a lot, you know?
Valuable experience.
Because I had been given the green light to have an opinion. I was told that my voice mattered. And so, listen, you don't have to tell me twice. I always have opinions, as you may know. But so then I started, like, talking about the script and the character, and then, like, apparently, like, someone got super offended by that and started, like, saying that I was so ungrateful. And I was literally, like, freaking out because I was, like, literally a no. None of this has been from an ungrateful, you know, point of view. It was just, like, I was told that we could talk about the script, and so I brought up some questions that I had, and then all of a sudden it was like this huge thing, and I thought I was going to get fired. And I kind of like set a line, and I was like, okay, I understand how it is. I understand really how it is, because I was lied to. And so I kind of like drew my line in the sand, and I saw some of my co-stars get similarly dragged, but they didn't draw a line. And so it just became like a very toxic work environment. And because I had drawn the line, I kind of became out of bounds and they wouldn't mess with me anymore. But I saw how they would treat some of my co-stars, and it was terrible to watch. And so that taught me a lot about like how to navigate certain like personalities in the industry that are that say they're collaborative, but they're not really. So, you know, be careful out there.
I mean, valuable lessons to learn, but a lesson you shouldn't have had to learn, because filmmaking is a collaborative art form. It's
supposed to be, yeah.
And if not for that, it can't happen, and it especially can't happen well.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it wasn't great, but it does, you know, you got to learn these lessons. These are all, like, learning experiences, and I was young and new. And so I was kind of, you know, very naively thinking like, oh, we're all in this together. We're doing this together. Like, cool. But it wasn't like that. And so it definitely, now I'm more cautious about everything, you know, about when someone says like, I'm open to notes, like, you know, let's talk about it. You're like, are you really? So you tread carefully. And then there's lots of people. I've worked with lots of people that are super collaborative and that are like, yeah, like best idea. Like Matt and Tyler are a great example. It's always best idea wins with them. And there's no ego there. They're like, yeah, cool. Let's try that. Why not? You know? And I think that's how it should be. So, yeah.
You see it in the final product. I'm a deep believer of that.
Yeah.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So here's a topic I really wanted to touch on. It did come from your THR article, those particular comments, because one thing that I feel like we don't talk enough about in these interviews is finding the right representation. And in particular, you specifically highlighted the value of your publicist, which I think everybody in this industry needs to look at those folks and have a better understanding of what they do. So two questions about that. First, at what point in your career did you realize you needed a publicist? And then how did you find someone that you knew felt like a good fit for you?
Okay. First part of the question. When did I find out that I needed a publicist? I think I was like kind of told that I needed
That's
a publicist. Like and in Mexico, I never worked with a publicist. It wasn't like I would use the publicist of the project that I was doing. I never kind of worked with my own. I never did actually. I confused the manager with a publicist. But when I got to L.A. and there was Vida and it was coming out, I was like, okay, how do I capitalize? Like, how do I capitalize, like, on this momentum? Like, it's a big deal. I have my first job in the States. Like, how am I going to get the word out? Because in the end, there is a lot of value in people knowing what you're doing. How are you going to make sure that people know about this? And it's selling it and selling yourself so that you get more opportunities, because I don't know, it's just the nature of the industry. It's like, I think you understand and I guess it's the same in every industry. If you have a product, even like you gotta, if you want people to buy it, people need to know about it. So it's that, you know. And so I started working with a publicist, and you know, I tried it, and then it wasn't really, we weren't really like vibing. I didn't like certain things about how they worked, and so finally I ended up switching, and I found my current publicists, and I adore them, Imprint. And we just understand each other. That's important. To me, the people that I work with, because in the nature of this industry, I'm kind of like hidden. Like actors are kind of like not the person you talk to ever. Yeah. You always talk to their representatives, and that includes publicists. And so they are my face, basically. They are an extension of me. So it's really important to me that they are nice people, that they are, you know, respectful and polite, and that people like them, and that they have a good experience with them, because that means that's an extension of me. You hear horror stories of like, oh, you know, their team, you know, this actor's team is like horrible to deal with, you know, and stuff. And that's true. And then it becomes, if the team is, you know, no one wants to take their calls or whatever because they're rude or whatever, then they think that you're like that. Mm-hmm. So I just have always been very careful of like having people on my team that are like good human beings, that everybody likes, that are good people, and they're also really good at their jobs, and that we are on the same page in a lot of things.
Can
and so yeah,
you're doing that.
Yeah. And so I feel very
team.
Very very lucky and fortunate that I have a great team all around, but my publicists have been incredible in like the last 6 months of my life, and it's just been amazing to have that support, because it's, you know, it's important, and it can be make or break for like your mental health, really.
Oh, without a doubt.
Yeah,
without
a doubt.
To feel
whether to feel that your team has your back or that you are alone can like be horrible. So I'm just lucky and
I
happy.
I feel like, yeah, the best. Seriously, the best. And, you know, operating in a high-pressure industry like this and in a world like this, if you don't have people at your back that make you feel supported, it's too easy to break. So
yeah.
I'm very glad you have that. I did want to touch on the idea of finding a sense of closure, I guess, with everything that's been going on.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll preface this by saying there's bigger things happening in the world that are way more important than a film franchise. But
yeah.
Ladies Night, as we continue to like focus on your craft and how it's evolving, I had two questions on that. First, I was curious just from a material perspective, given everything that's happened, can you have closure with the character of Sam? And if not, how do you manage that so you could kind of move forward to other projects with a clear head?
I feel like I've gotten closure. Yeah, my head is clear. I feel like the ending of Six was a very good ending. And so I don't feel like, oh, I got left in the middle of a... No. Like, I think people, the fans, were wanting a third movie to kind of continue that arc. And apparently the plan was a trilogy, even though I was only contracted for two movies. So I did my two movies, and I'm fine, you know, like I'm good with that. I got two. That's more than most people get, you know, and it's like when you're on a TV show and it gets canceled, like you can't harp on things. You got to move on. That's the nature of this industry too. Like I get excited for the next job. Like I get excited for the next skin that I get to put on. Like it's exciting to get to create a different character. So yeah, I think I feel good. I did what I set out to do. It was always meant to be two movies for me because that was my contract. And so everything is perfect. I have this mantra that my mom always taught me, and this is how I've lived my life, like, everything is perfect. Even if it feels like something very dramatic or something that didn't go as you wanted it, everything is perfect and everything happens for a reason. And yeah, I'm already on the next chapter, you know?
Given that, and you use the phrasing moving forward, can you tell me a little bit about what moving forward means to you? Because as I was trying to formulate this question, I kept focusing on the word closure. But as you continue on in this industry, it's not necessarily about closure. It's about, like, what you learned and gained from the experience that you've been through and how that's going to shape how you forge forward. So what does forging forward now look like for you?
Just continuing to put myself out there, you know, unafraid, because I'm here to stay, you know. So just continuing to, like, audition. I have a lot of things that I still want to do. I have a lot of, like, dreams that I want to accomplish, a lot of different kinds of movies that I want to do. I want to produce, I want to direct. So there's so much that I can busy myself with, and I can't, like, focusing on, like, something that happened and already happened, and it's not, like, it's nothing. Like you said, there are more important things that are happening in the world. And that's, you know, that was just a little hiccup. I'm good.
You're here to stay.
Yeah.
And I'm here to cover everything you do. I look forward when we do, like, Ladies Night 20.
Yeah.
And I'm covering, like, I don't know, your directorial debut or your action movie where you're on a motorcycle or a scooter or whatever you choose.
Yeah.
I'll jump from there into Abigail. This has become one of my favorite questions about finding a character. When you first signed on for the role of Joey, can you tell me a quality of hers you are most looking forward to tapping into? But then I also want to know a quality you found along the way that wound up being more important to the character than you realized at the start.
Oh, interesting. Good question. I think the first thing when I read the script, the first challenge that I was excited to take on was, on paper, the role felt very straightforward and potentially very similar to Sam in Scream. So I was like, okay, cool. How can I make her different? How can I make her distinct? Especially since, like, I just did Scream 6. And so I don't want people to think, like, oh, she's doing the same thing. You know, like, that's never what you want. So I was like, okay, this is a challenge. Like, this is cool. And I was excited about the, you know, this strong, observant, kind of cold criminal woman that is the character. And, you know, all of these characters are, like, badass in a different way. Like, they're all, you know, cool and they're living a life that's like, whoa, like, what brought you to being a kidnapper, dude? So I think there's a way there's a way that these characters are always kind of portrayed in, like, being, like, super tough. But I wanted to show the vulnerable side of her and, you know, the nurturing and the protector in her. And that was interesting to me, like those two sides of someone that's meant to be, like, a tough girl that's supposed to, like, just survive the night, you know, survive those 24 hours in this. And so that was interesting. And then along the way, I was always very conscious that I wanted to, because there's a lot of, like, you know, just eyes in the beginning. Mm-hmm. I was like, how do I show all of the things that I want to show in this, the fear that she has, the pain that she's carrying, but the hopefulness that, like, that she's, like, brainwashed herself that, like, I'm only doing this because this is my way out, you know? And her resistance to, like, forming this bond, to, like, establishing a relationship with this girl, but her, like, very clearly feeling bad for the girl and wanting to, like, be as nice as possible and make sure that nothing happens to her. So there was a lot of things that I was like, okay, how do I show all of this through my eyes and make sure that it's that weight is carried throughout the entire movie, even when it gets chaotic. And because Joey has this, like, is the emotional core of the movie, I think it allows for all the other characters to be kind of crazy and to, you know, because it is a crazy movie. And it's very funny because all these characters are like, what? Like, what in the world brought all these people together? You know, like, it's amazing. And it was all the actors that brought that to each character. But there was a moment where I remember we were shooting, I think it was a scene where we find out that she's a vampire. And then afterwards we're like brainstorming, like, what are we going to do? And it got so wild.
The garlic and the onions.
Everything was so wild in that scene that I remember going to Matt and being like, Matt, I feel like I'm in a different movie than everybody else. Like, because it's just so funny. Like, everything is so funny. And to me, everything is so serious. Like, I'm just, like genuinely trying to survive and get out of here. He's like, exactly. Like, that's exactly it. Like, yes, you are in a different movie. You have to be in a different movie. Because otherwise, this movie just becomes wacky and crazy. Like, if you are going to be the like we say in Spanish, el cable a tierra. Like, the pillar or, like, the base, you know, the
anchor.
What do you call it? The anchor.
Yeah.
And so that was interesting for me to find out. And it's just, it's amazing because you learn something new in every movie. I learned something new about, like, filmmaking and about, like, how directors direct and how they find the tone of a movie. And it's just fascinating. Even as an actor in it, I was like, am I crazy? And then I found out that Catherine was also went to Matt and Tyler and was like, I don't know what I'm doing. I feel like I'm in a different movie. So we were all kind of saying that. But Matt and Tyler, knowing what they were going to do, kind of just let us all do our thing because they knew that it was going to work. And so that was amazing.
Such good leaders. I love that you say anchor, and I use that word in my review to describe
it. You did?
Oh, great. I swear to God.
Awesome.
I genuinely did.
Yeah.
Because you started to bring up the ensemble. Here's a big old acting question, because I love how many different processes there are out there. And, like, this ensemble is filled with, like, one powerhouse after the next. Of everyone in the Abigail cast, can you tell me which two people have the most, like, polar opposite process, where when you're acting opposite them, you know you'll have a unique acting experience?
Dan? Dan Stevens is hilarious. And he will improv and to make you laugh. So you always know that you're gonna get something new, and it's gonna, obviously, if you're present and just reacting to what he's saying, you know that he's gonna get something new out of you, which is really cool. Although he made it very hard for me sometimes to get through a scene because he's just so funny. He's always thinking, he's always machinating of, like, what he can say to, like, break you. And it's hilarious. And then Angus was also incredible. Angus was, he would never do the same thing twice. He just was, like, living it, you know? Like, it was so beautiful to watch. I learned so much from him, watching him. It was, we were all, like, whenever it was his coverage, we were all, like, you know, just, like, couldn't take our eyes off him because he was just so natural, like, such a natural in front of the camera. Like, doesn't faze him. I'm sure it did faze him, but he was just so good, and it was beautiful because you also, were just reacting to something different every time and keeping it fresh. He was very good at it.
Everyone in this is something else, just because I feel like saying it too. I covered Angus's movie Your Lucky Day at Fantastic Fest last year, and it's on Netflix now. So I highly recommend that in addition to Abigail, both something else. I want to talk a little bit about the set pieces. First, in particular, blood, because now between the two Scream movies and this, like, I have seen you just like absolutely covered in blood time and time again.
Yeah.
Is there any particular tip and trick you've learned from dealing with so much blood in those movies that you found making it easier in Abigail?
Yeah. So when I first started working with blood, it was probably Scream. And I would just like be, I would feel completely incapacitated because you're all sticky and you don't want to touch anything because everything gets covered in blood. And you're like, okay, like, you know, blood continuity. And you're, I was just like, I'm like a freak of nature of like continuity. Like I'm super OCD about every, I like, I'll remember everything about a scene. I'll remember where everybody had their hand. I'll remember who touched what on one line. Like, I'm just like that.
Script supervisor.
Yeah,
must
I would
love
be a
you.
Script, I would be a great script supervisor. But then I relaxed a little bit and I kind of just like enjoy it more. And if I, like, before I would, like, I wouldn't even want to go to the bathroom because then that meant that, like, first of all, it was going to be super complicated to wipe myself because it would, the toilet paper sticks to your hands. And right. And then I would have to, like, wash my hands. And then that meant that I would have to go back to hair and makeup and, like, tell them to please get my hands again. And I just felt so bad. And so I was, like, super uptight. And then now I'm, like, whatever I have to do, I'll do. And then they'll just like spray me again. Like, it's fine.
I understand this thinking all too well. Yeah. Like, even just in my everyday life, it's like if I touch something sticky, it's like I have to be like this all day to not get the sticky anywhere else.
Yeah, that's what I like. I'd just be like, and I'd be like sitting in the chair like this, like not wanting to like get it in the chair, like not even. And now I'm like, whatever. Give me my, and then I'd put, you know, I'd put the towel on and it would stick all over. Oh. And then like, it, yeah, I would have to peel it off.
I feel like I'm like getting chills just thinking about that feeling right now.
Yeah. I think what I learned is that you gotta do you, and you gotta like take care of yourself and your necessities. And if you're cold, get a coat on. Doesn't matter if you're covered in blood. And if you need to go to the bathroom, go. And if you need to wash your hands, and they'll, and you know, they'll spray them again. Like, whatever. It's just, you know, just fun.
Self-care, but on a very bloody movie. Yeah, yeah. Unless I get yelled at, I'll squeeze in two more questions. So big set pieces in this movie. Again, so many that are just so wildly impressive, but also very complex. Going into filming, which one did you think was going to be the toughest to pull off? And ultimately, was it the toughest or did a different one catch you by surprise?
Of mine or in general?
I mean, you're an observer, too.
Yeah.
You're in Video Village all the time, so I'll take either.
Yeah. I thought the body pool was going to be super hard to pull off. I was like, how are they going to do that? Like, and what is it going to be like? Like, I just assumed that it was going to be water. I thought it was going to be water, like, colored and, like, made red, and that there were going to be, like, a few floating bodies or something. And then they made, like, it was like mud. Poor Catherine. Like, honestly, she had to go down there and it's like, it was disgusting.
She rocks so many of those scenes.
Oh, wow. Like, it was incredible. And it was like, I had major FOMO because I love doing that stuff. Like, I would, and I told the guys, after Catherine is done, can I jump in the pool? Like, can I just like quickly jump?
Did you?
No, I didn't. Oh. They didn't let me. But, because they were like, nah, you're going to have to clean yourself. Like, what, you know, it just was logistically complicated. But Catherine, you know, had to get in there. And her, like, because it's like a thick substance, it was hard for her to even move. So she had to, like, go under the surface and then come out. And there was resistance. Like, it was, so she got, I think, very claustrophobic and, like, and stressed, and she was like, that's the hardest thing I've ever had to do in my life. I was like, Catherine, it is not. She was like, it is. It was the hardest thing I've ever done. And I was like, whoa. But it looked great.
Oh, it looks so good.
Yeah. That was like one of the things that I knew was going to be hard, and it was hard for her. And then I guess all the blood cannons. The blood cannons were, I thought it was going to be more complicated, but it wasn't. Like, it turned out to be easy. They just worked perfectly.
It looks like so much fun.
It was
like, I marvel at like gore and blood effects and all that kind of stuff all day long.
Yeah.
Watching like B-roll of how that stuff is pulled off, like, yeah, never ceases to amaze me.
Oh, it's so fun. It's so fun. And I, you know, we were all excited for the blood cannons, like the time, the moment. And there, I have this video, and I have it on my phone, of the first time that we tested the blood cannon in front of the whole crew. And it was, you know, Dublin in the summer. It was a beautiful day. It was sunny. We were shooting in this mansion. The gardens were like Versailles. Like, it was like gardens galore. And they set up this, like, kind of like a, you know, in a photo studio where you have like the backdrop. So they set up this backdrop, and they had one of our crew stand in front of the cannon, and we were all like an audience, like this, like little kids just waiting for it. And I took a video of it, and it was just so fun. Like, obviously it's complicated because it's got to work and it's got to look right, and the directors have to like how it looks, because otherwise the reset is,
I can't even imagine.
Yeah. Like, it's just, it would like ruin our day, you know, because then you have to wait and all of that. But they just worked perfectly the first time around. All of them was pretty awesome.
The glee on my face watching this movie every single time one went off.
Yeah.
It's just like literally grinning, like clapping like a tiny child.
Yeah.
I love it. Couldn't get enough.
So much fun. So much fun.
So before I ask my last question, just because we haven't said her name yet, Alicia is so good on
her. She's like a superstar.
Like, truly a superstar.
Like,
I watched Matilda the Musical too. Speaking of TikTok too, watching that movie and certain beats like take off on TikTok, where like people weren't just watching it being like, this is a cool clip. They were analyzing like how athletic every single dancer and just like what like deft performers they all had to be. It just,
yeah,
it overjoyed me to see that take off in that way on social media.
Yeah. And she's incredible, and she's such a professional. She's so young. Like, I just, because I wasn't a child actor. I wasn't acting at that age. So it just always, child actors always amaze me. But then, like, having a role like this at such a young age, where she's having to, like, play basically two different parts in one and, like, switching from one to another. And, like, it's just incredible to me that she did that. And she did, like, she's Irish and she's doing an American accent, and she's doing all her own stunts. She's on wire, she's flying, she's doing acrobatics, she's doing flips, and she has like teeth that are uncomfortable to have in your mouth and to talk in, and contacts that made her like partially blind. So, like, you know, such a pro. Like, incredible.
She's going to go on to do, like, everything.
Oh, yeah.
And then some.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I can't wait.
Me too. And she also deserves, like, she's one of the best people. So sweet. Her family is incredible. Yeah. And it's very exciting to get to say, like, when she's like, you know.
It's going to happen.
Yeah.
Oh, I believe
100%. 100%.
So here's the last question of Ladies Night. I actually think I asked this to you last time, but you must have been one of the first, because it's a more recent end to every single Ladies Night interview. And I feel like it's a good question to ask someone often, because I think it's an important thing to think about. So in this business, people give each other awards. That's super cool. That's wonderful.
Yeah.
No one says good job to themselves nearly enough. I want you to tell me something you did on Abigail that you know you'll be able to look back on and say, I am so proud of what I did there.
That's a good question. Like, acting-wise? Or
literally,
just like,
literally anything you want. The door is wide open with this one.
Well, I think I'm proud of myself because I was dealing with a lot personally while shooting like the last bit of the movie. And so the fact that I like wasn't freaking out and I was actually like, you know, just going to work and doing that, like, it was a new kind of experience for me. But it it just like showed me that I'm like, I got it. You know, like I really love what I do. And so I know that I'm a professional and that I can do it no matter what. That I can compartmentalize and that I'm not the kind of actor that will take all my stuff to set and then make everyone's life miserable. Like I'm very good about like keeping it professional and like keeping it light and fun because everyone wants to have fun on set. But the fact that I like was able to do that, I'm proud of myself for that. Yeah.
As you should be. Yeah. As you should be. I've truly said this twice this year now because of your monster and because of Abigail now. You're a fucking star, and this industry is lucky to have you.
Thank you.
Congratulations on everything you've accomplished, on Abigail, and everything coming your way in the future. I say this to a lot of guests because truly, like, the Ladies Night roster has always been an absolute joy, and I love everyone dearly. This invitation is especially big for you, though. Anytime you want, this door is wide open.
Thank you. I will be back so many times. I'm going to do this one more time.
Okay, go for it.
It didn't come out.
It's a three.
Oh, it's a three.
It's in the door.
Okay.
Do you actually want the question?
Well, can we?
I mean, if you want, yeah.
Let's do it.
This will be a first. Oh, it's a fun one. I can't believe I've never asked you this before.
Okay, let's do it.
This is my would you rather question.
Okay.
Would you rather have to fake sneeze or fake vomit in a scene?
Fake vomit. I think I'm pretty good at it. I have this pet peeve about vomiting in movies that, you know, when you vomit, there's a sound. There's a guttural sound that we make
like that
when
sounds.
We vomit. I don't like it either. It's horrible. But no one ever makes it in movies. Everyone's always just like opening, like doing like a, and like that's it. And so I find that not good. And so when I fake vomit, I will do that sound because I think that that's the way that people actually vomit. And I think that that's easier. Fake sneezing, I think, is hard.
People usually pick fake sneeze thinking like vomit is gross, but then I have to be like, well, can you fake sneeze?
No, it's hard.
It is hard.
I think it's hard.
It's hard. Yeah. Well, we've solidified that. So now that we know you prefer fake vomit, we can end this episode of waiting. Thank you. Seriously, thank you again for doing this.
Thank you. Always a pleasure.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.